Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
With the third pick in the 2019 NBA Draft, the New York Knicks select RJ Barrett.
What's up, everybody? After another hiatus, I'm back. It's your boy, your guide, your shepherd through this maze of draft analysis, draft takes. It's me, it's Press, and I'm here with a very special first-time guest. It's Maxwell from No Ceilings. And if you don't know, if you're listening to this podcast and you don't know who or what No Ceilings is, then I wish I could just be in your shoes. No Ceilings is a very, very prolific website with a small army of contributors who write about the draft for news, for a newsletter on Twitter, online, on YouTube. They got podcasts, and I would count Maxwell among the best in the game, and he's written a bunch of articles this year, and every time I read one of them, I'm like, god damn, like, get out of my head maybe also. And I also end up just wondering more and more, like, damn, I gotta get this guy on the pod, because anybody could write about the top three picks, but Maxwell keeps writing about the guys I want the Knicks to steal later in the draft, which is the topic of today's podcast.
But before we do that, do have to make a few announcements. First, we have the Strickland has an Instagram. Check that out. That is at Strickland on Instagram. We are posting all kinds of content there. The Strickland also has a YouTube channel. We've been watching this podcast. If you are, and you have not done so already, please hit like, subscribe to the channel, leave us a comment. That'd be a huge help to us. The Strickland also has merchandise, which you can find on our website at www.thestrick.land. There's a link that'll take you to the merchandise store. You can find all kinds of cool stuff on there. T-shirts, sweatshirts, hats, coffee mugs, water bottles, you name it. We've got it. There's a whole new line of merchandise available on there. The Nova York line, which, if you watched the game yesterday, you may be inspired to purchase. Check it out. Really, really good work by Alex on that. Strickland also has a Patreon, which you can subscribe to. There are a number of different tiers. There's a $6 tier that gets you access to Strickland's podcast that I host every Friday with Prez. You also get access to Takes Me Out of His Bozos, our newest podcast that is hosted by Andrew Steele, a.k.a. Doug, along with Zach Blatter. And you get access to the Strickland Discord, where the conversation never stops. It certainly has not stopped at any point in the last 24 hours. There are further tiers. There's a $9 tier that gets you access to Stricken Roll, my solo pod, where I rant and rave even more. You also get access to wonderful premium articles by Matthew Miranda, one of the best in the business. And now you get access to Strictly NFL, which, you guessed it, is our newest podcast. That is an NFL podcast that is hosted by Constantine Metricos. There are further tiers. There's a $15 tier, $30 tier, $50 tier, and a $100 tier that's come with a variety of additional benefits, like listening on pod recordings, merchandise discounts, and even potentially co-hosting a podcast alongside yours truly one day, whether you choose to subscribe or not, and this will be possible without you. And none of this would be possible without BetOnline. BetOnline is your number one source for summer sports this season, from MLB, golf, NBA, and NHL playoff stats. All the latest stats, news, and scores available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to the website today or use a mobile device to get into the action. BetOnline, where the game starts.
Maxwell, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm glad that kind of content, like, resonates with people, because that's what got me into this, was like, being a draft sicko, it's the name of the podcast on the No Ceilings feed, but just like being a guy who wanted to know more about guys further down the board, because there's always been a plethora of content about the people at the top. And like, I don't know, you can find that anywhere. So I want to try to serve some sort of place in the market of all this stuff. So I'm glad that it's hitting with people, and I'm excited to talk about these guys. Cause these are guys that definitely like appeal to me at different points throughout the season. And I'm really interested in all of them, especially considering the Knicks roster and how they fit into that construction.
Yeah. We'll talk a little bit about the Knicks, and for those listening, God, I need more coffee. we're recording this shortly after the Knicks got their asses handed to them in game 6. So by the time this has come out, the Knicks may be in Cancun, or they may be playing Boston. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
They might have to pull Latrell Sprewell and John Starks out of street clothes for the last game. So at this current moment in time, I'm not super confident, but that's neither here nor there. We'll talk about that when we talk about roster fit with the Knicks. Just wanted to let people know where we are in the time-space continuum as a time of recording this. And I'm happy you brought up, you know, the interest in later picks or guys who are not talked about as much, because Knicks fans, I've found, generally there's exceptions to this, of course, but the Knicks fans who are draft fans have all gone on a similar journey, which is usually, unless you're older like me, you might have, a lot of them got into the draft with like the RJ Barrett, John Morant, Zion draft. For me personally, I've always been into it, but it really got kicked into sicko mode with the Kristaps draft back in the day, with Towns and Okafor and all of those dudes. Emmanuel Mudiay, Knicks legend, who was the guy I wanted on the Knicks second most. Kristaps was the guy I wanted the most, assuming Towns was gone. A lot of us started out, you know, caring mostly about the top 10 picks and all of that. But as the Knicks have become competent and now just flat out good, you know, we're like, oh my God, Emmanuel Quickley, 25th pick, Quentin Grimes, 25th pick, Deuce McBride, second round. He's playing great in the playoffs. So like now, like all we care, like nobody gives a fuck about the top 10 picks on Knicks Twitter. It's just like, who can we steal? Who's a fucking dog who can fit in with the Knicks culture and probably can shoot it, because the Knicks tend to draft shooters. So on that note, I will spell out the topic for today. We're going to talk about three players in particular, all of whom Maxwell has written about. So once we post this on YouTube and Twitter and upload it to Spotify, we'll also link to the respective pieces. But it's three players. It's Tyler Smith, the forward from the G League, Jameer Watkins, the guard slash forward from, I guess you could just call him a wing, from Florida State University, and Neek Clifford, the wing from Colorado State. I guess before we get into the particulars of each player, I'm curious where you stand on like the question. I think this is sort of a red herring personally, like best player available versus fit. I think, especially on a team that doesn't have a lot of roster spots, like you need to fit a little bit if you're going to play, and you kind of need to play to develop. So like you could take somebody who's really good and plays center, for example, on the Knicks, but like there's a chance they might not play because they're stuck behind Isaiah Hartenstein and Mitchell Robinson, right? So like you have to kind of evaluate that. Do you let, if someone's the overwhelming like favorite player on your board and there's some clogged position minute, there's not minutes to go around, like there's still an argument to take them, of course, but like what do you make of that kind of basic philosophical question for the Knicks?
Yeah, I'm like generally a best player available guy. I tend to think that like if a guy, I want to phrase this carefully. I think at a certain point it almost like stops mattering to a point, because I think at a certain point in the draft, like you're generally just getting the guys that aren't going to play right away anyway. So in that case, it's like, well, by the time they're ready, like who knows what your roster could be in the modern NBA. So, but I do think a little bit at the top, it matters to a degree. I generally just think that like, if it's a good problem to have if you're worried about like a minutes log jam. And if someone's going to actually play as a rookie and like return value for your team, like that's pretty rare. So I tend not to worry about it. But then if they do, it's like really a great problem to have. It's like, well, then you can take one of those players that is also returning value and trade it for something else and fill a hole somewhere else. So I tend to just go best player available. But I think like generally after the first several picks, like you can't worry too much about fit anyway. Like you're just hoping to get guys that are long-term NBA players at a certain point.
Yeah. I think that's kind of right. And we've seen as much with the Knicks picks of the last couple of years. Like Deuce is killing right now, but the guy was on a shuttle between Manhattan and Westchester for pretty much 2 years. And, you know, the G League as a place to develop is definitely hit or miss. It works for some players. It does. I would say Deuce's situation where he kind of like, you know, so at West Virginia, he was great at a lot of things, but basically ran like no pick and rolls and didn't shoot a lot of threes. And they put him in Westchester and they were like, bro, you and Jericho Sims are going to run 9,000 pick and rolls every game. And you're going to shoot like 10 threes a game.
Yeah.
Like you could, that sort of stuff works. And
I think for shooting and like on ball development, it's pretty good. Exactly. I think if you want a guy to like work through like defensive habits or like learn how to play off the ball, it's just like, you're not getting that. Like you're not. I also think like for certain guys too, like there can be problems where they're almost like too good for the G League in a positional sense, where I think like if you are a guy that doesn't have NBA center size and you're like an NBA power forward in terms of like your measurements, but you're really strong, like those guys clean up in the G League. Like Adama Sinogo is like a dominant G League player. But like no NBA team is like, we've got to get Adama Sinogo off the Bulls. Like no one cares. Like it's just not super translatable. So I think it is something that, like, if you are going to say we're going to take this player and put them in the G League, I do think like positions matter. And I think like what their role is going to be and what you have them working on there matters, because like there's certain things that like the up and down nature of the league, how often roster turnover occurs. Like there's a lot of things that go into it that like, I'm not as sold on the G League as like, oh yeah, you can like absolutely develop guys there. Like, I think you really need to be careful about the situation and what the player needs to work on.
Yeah. The way you phrased it is perfect. It really depends on the skills, because there are certain things you can work on in the G League. Like Deuce was able to work on just putting up a lot of threes and putting them up off the dribble and pick and rolls, but you know, he couldn't work in the G League. That took NBA reps for him to figure out. Driving versus rim protection, because that doesn't really happen in the G League, even though you do have some, you know, a Jericho Sims here or a Sinogo there. Like, it's just so up and down. You know, you're not going to find the kind of centers who are like, oh, I'm perfectly playing the ball handler and big as they drop. Yeah.
And I have a 7'5 wingspan. Like, those guys just are on NBA teams. Like, those guys just generally are not in the G League. Like, Jericho Sims is an outlier in terms of a guy who is in the G League.
Right. And even him is like, God, I really don't enjoy Jericho Sims playoff minutes. I'll put it that way. So,
you don't have a choice.
I know, right? God, shit, man. But yeah, so like another perfect example, just speaking of, you know, the Knicks and the Pacers, like Jairus Walker's been in the G League and he puts up great scoring numbers. But like, according to the Pacer people on the internet, like Caitlin Cooper, like he's kind of just chilling on defense in the G League, even though that's like his whole jam as a prospect. So, you know, that's another reason why you might not be able to get certain kinds of reps versus NBA defense in the G League. So with that all said, like, I'm kind of assuming the player the Knicks pick, if they pick one player, will probably get some G League reps. Cause like you said, most players on who are rookies and not top 10 picks and are on crowded rosters will get some reps, but depending on what their role is, even if the Knicks are fully healthy, there's some clear spots in our roster where like minutes could be had. And it's not crazy minutes, right? It's, you know, situational minutes. If someone gets hurt, it's maybe 5 to 15 minutes a game. Like, we don't really have a backup point guard. Deuce is rapidly improving his capability to put the ball on the deck and score. So by next season, maybe we will. But right now, he's just like a bomb ass, amazing two guard to me, who can do some stuff off the dribble. And then we don't really have much in the way of bench wings, depending on if you include like the OG Alec Burks doing his best to fill in for various injured Knicks or Bogdanovich if he comes back. But like that all depends on the surgery and the guys, you know, he's getting up there in years for NBA years. So it's pretty much just Josh Hart right now as far as guys you can pencil in. And obviously we all know Tibbs doesn't just pencil in Josh Hart, but he chisels his name in stone like commandments to Moses. So so the guys we have that we want to talk about today all kind of fit into that backup wing spot, with arguably the exception of Tyler Smith, who I guess we can talk about him first.
Yeah, let's do it.
I think he's the one you wrote about. Oh, no, you wrote about Jameer first. But anyway, for people who don't know Tyler Smith, he's like pretty tall. He's 6'10 or maybe even 6'11.
He just measured, I think it's 6'9 barefoot at the combine.
Oh, okay, cool. So, yeah, probably like 6'10-ish, depending on what kind of shoes he got on. And I describe him as like a power forward. I don't describe him as a big or as a wing or anything, or like a 4 or 5. He's kind of one of those guys who, like, they're completely different players, but like Julius Randle is not somebody you want playing center. He's just not a good rim protector, but he's also not somebody you want playing small forward because he's ginormous. So, scattered around the league, there's a couple of quote unquote power forwards who, depending on if their team plays small ball, they can masquerade a little bit as a small ball five, or if a team is Tibbs pilled and they want rim protection the whole game, then they're just a power forward, right? So like positionally, how do you view Tyler Smith?
Yeah, I think he's a four. I think part of me like really wanted him to be a 4 or 5 hybrid, and I just don't think he is, at least now. When I did my column on him, I came away like really pleased with what I saw offensively in terms of a guy who's going to play the power forward position. I just think defensively the center stuff is a problem. There's flashes of it. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I don't think he's hopeless on the defensive end. And from the stuff I've heard about him, like as a guy, I think he's going to do everything he can to maximize that and be like a more consistent weak side rim protector. I know that's been like a big focus for him during pre-draft. I wrote my article about him, and then like the weekend after, I watched them play the Windy City Bulls like in person in Chicago.
Oh, cool. Was that when Ron was still playing?
No,
Ron Holland?
Ron was out, which like in a weird way was like almost instructive, because I got to like really hone in on like Matis and Tyler and Almansa a little bit more than I would have otherwise.
So for people who don't know what the hell we're talking about, the main usage guy on the Ignite, Ron Holland, who should probably be a top 10 pick, maybe will be in a little after that, who knows. He had a 30 usage for the Ignite, and then he got hurt. And he wrapped up his season, so everybody else on the team, like Tyler Smith, got to shoot quite a lot more once he went down.
Yeah. The other thing that happened on Ignite was Eric Mika, who was like their center, was also injured. And like Mika's not a rim protector, but just he's a center-sized guy. And like Smith had to cover more of those 5 minutes. And watching him up close, like those center minutes were like an absolute disaster for him, like in the win against Windy City Bulls. Like he was so late to the rim like several times, and ball screen defense, it just felt like he didn't really know how to manage like man and ball. He had a couple plays where like he jumped way too early. He had a couple plays where he waited way too long to jump to contest the shot around the rim. Like the instinctually, he just has a long way to go when it comes to the five spot. And he's still like a little thin. Like he's 220-ish or so. Like a lot of guys his age. Yeah, 223.8. But like for a power forward, like he's got great size. I think the offensive skills package is like actually quite a bit more interesting than some people give him credit for.
Did we get a wingspan from him?
Yeah. So the wingspan at the combine was 7'1". So he's got an 8'9" standing reach. So like if he's like a jumbo four, basically, is like where the measurements come out.
Yeah. And for a five, those measurements would be so this kind of
they would be a little underwhelming. Yeah,
like for point of reference for listeners, Jericho Sims and Cam Reddish both have an 8'10" standing reach, which is not particularly great for a center, which is one of the reasons Jericho Sims struggles with rim protection, among others, just like related to knowing what to do. But size wise, it's just tough when you don't have that margin for error. A lot of like Mitchell Robinson, I think he's like 7 foot, like 4 standing reach or something crazy like that. So it's and I think Hartenstein is like 7 foot 2 or 3 standing reach.
Yeah.
And these guys are taller to begin with. So that all kinds of checks out, because like, I'm curious if you know, I don't know much about his basketball journey before the Ignite.
Mm-hmm.
But the way he kind of shoots the ball and just kind of moves on offense, he gives me very strong, like, we're short and then had a growth spurt and just carried over some smooth skills vibes. But I have no idea if that's true.
I don't know. So he came into my radar when he played at OTE. So he was in OTE last year. And he was like, he was interesting because of the size and just like his ability to move defensively. Like in a league like that, it really showed, because like he's playing at certain kids that are like 16.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, like physically, just how he moved around the court, it was clear that he was like more of an NBA guy than a lot of guys in OTE. But like he was a theoretical jump shot guy, but he was always like a good shooter for his height and age. I felt like when he was there, I was like, oh yeah, that guy's like going to be a dude because he's shooting, you know, 29% or whatever, but he's 6'11 and he's, you know, young. So, yeah, he was sort of a guy I always bought. I think he was generally a forward growing up, I would guess.
Yeah. That makes sense. I just figured I would ask. And then you mentioned like at OTE, he was sort of like a good for his age and height kind of guy. Mm-hmm. To me now, he's just straight up a good shooter, like full stop.
Yes, I would agree. He,
regardless of size.
I had gotten tipped off at the OTE pro day last year. So like before, it was like the summer, they did like a pro day thing, mostly to showcase like a Amena Nassar.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked to somebody that was there that was like, keep an eye on Tyler Smith. Like he's going to be a first round pick next year. And that's, yeah, like that's where he's at now. Like he is just deadly off the catch. I think my favorite thing about him is he's very decisive. Like he's really quick to just get on or off the ball. Like it is either like going up or he's moving it, and he doesn't really screw anything up. Like he's very just quick on off, like on a team that was absolutely horrible. And like nobody really knew what was going on. Like he was the one guy, especially among the younger players, that just like came in ready to play a role. So he shot 73% on free throws over the course of the full year, 36% from three, but that's from the NBA line at that height, at that age, which is like really good. Like you,
and he had pretty good volume.
Yeah. Almost like 4 a game. And keep in mind, like how many like quote unquote, like bigger players were usually like, well, you know, and then maybe he can add the shot or whatever. Like usually at his height, like it's so much more theoretical at this point that like 36% from the NBA line. I'm loving, I love that.
Yeah, and it looks good.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code POD to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code POD at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code POD.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/Westwood One, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/Westwood One now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/Westwood One.
Like, that's the thing. Like, it's actually beautiful. I'm like, wow, this, I'm definitely going to tap into the stats, blah, blah, blah. But like, the thing just, if you just saw him in an empty gym, you'd be like, oh yeah, this guy, he can do the thing. And yeah,
it's a very repeatable motion. And the other thing is too, like, he's got like a pretty nice mid-range pull-up that like he went to a couple times. It made me think that like, I really liked how he played in like DHO and like Zoom and stuff like that. That made me think like, he's going to be a guy that's like able to put it on the deck and then like pull up from three at a certain point. Like if he's running a handoff action on the perimeter and a defender is sagging, like that shot is going to be there for him relatively soon. He made 42.9% of his pull-up twos. Like the volume wasn't crazy, but like that's a shot that he can take and make, like a deep pull-up too. So like I think there's a chance that there's some more functionality to it beyond like just being a catch and shoot or like just being a pick and pop guy.
Yeah, and you know, Synergy has him at 46% on unguarded catch and shoot threes, 33% on guarded. So like, I mean, I don't know if the 33% is noise or whatever, but like I'll usually look at like 2-point jumpers, free throw percentage, unguarded threes, and he kind of checks all those boxes pretty easily. And then on top of that, to your point about like him being able to do some stuff beyond just the shooting off the catch, like I think my favorite thing about him, which is probably among the coach's least favorite things about him, is he loves taking like finesse floaters and touch shots around the rim. And he takes them too much. Like like if Tibbs saw him doing that, he would throw him into the East River. Like, bro, you're a lefty taking like Mike Conley wrong foot, wrong hand, like touch shots around the rim. Mm-hmm. But it kind of just speaks to, I liked seeing that just from the ambitiousness perspective, and because like it shows that weirdly he has kind of, he's trying these touch shots, and of course you don't want to take the hard ones, but something like, you know, someone closes out and you can take a mid-range pull-up or like a little big man floater, you know, Isaiah Hartenstein style, right? Like 15 feet out, we know the Knicks love a good floater. Like I would probably bet on that being in the bag at some point.
Yeah, I think the pull-up two is for sure there. Like the pull-up mid-range shot I love with him. I think my biggest like gripe with him is how he drives and attacks the basket. So like I have like a lot of I keep a lot of data on guys that were like that are players that were like from when they were prospects that stuck in the NBA.
Yeah.
And the one guy who like he was eerily similar to that, I was like, let me dig into this guy's like pre-NBA film, was Lauri Markkanen. And like the biggest thing that college Lauri and G League Ignite Tyler Smith have in common is like their first step is so similar, where it's very like choppy. I'm like just putting one foot down and then I'm taking my stride and I'm very upright, as opposed to like I've pump faked, I am low and I'm exploding. Like that was a huge hang up for like, if you look at like how Lauri drives now versus when he was at Arizona, it's much different from a pure like just body mechanics standpoint. That's the biggest thing I'd like to see change in Tyler's game, because like to your point, like I think that touch stuff is going to be there. And like he didn't shoot a great percentage on layups, but I like the guys who do shoot poorly on layups pre-draft are usually like these kind of guys that are like taller and more athletic and then like figure it out later. Like I don't
think and they're just trying too much shit.
Yeah. So like, and he was top 20 in the G League in dunks. So like he's a guy who can get up when he has that runway. I think just fixing how he approaches that first step to get to the basket a little bit more easily is going to be like huge for him. Like that would be something I would put a ton of work on, is like, let's just focus on like getting run off the line for a while.
Lauri probably has the best, if not like top five athletic gains from prospect to peak.
Yeah. I was like surprised how bad like the Arizona like first step footwork was. Like I was genuinely shocked because like I threw it by some, but like a couple people like, and I was like, hey, what do you think of this? And they were all like, absolutely not. Lauri's a better athlete. I'm like, I just watched the Arizona tape and like he is in certain ways, but that first step off the line was not one of them.
Yeah, I did the same thing after I read your thing, because I Laurie was a prospect that I liked a lot, and I actually married into a Wildcat family, so I do okay. watch a fair share of Arizona even back in the day. And you know, we're all used to Laurie just like fucking posterizing, and just he's mm-hmm. like looks like a Greek god, and he's just sculpted with his like Finnish military body or whatever. But like back then, he was just kind of like a like very similar body to Tyler Smith. Like they weren't like bones, but they weren't like they ain't been in the gym that much of their lives. Yeah. And from a bio, and that's just from a bulk perspective, let alone like a biomechanics perspective, like you said. So mm-hmm. I do think physically he seems like the kind of guy who he might be able to get stronger. He might be able to get more athletic, and that would be cool. The last question I have for you on him. So like we talked about his defense being a bit of a shit show when they threw him out there at mm-hmm. the five.
Yeah.
And I know his defense, like people, I feel like are all over his defense as a four. And to mm-hmm. me, when I watch, he's kind of your classic. He has tools, like he's pretty agile on his feet. And like when he does recognize like, oh, this is the time for me to go weak side shot block. And, mm-hmm. you know, he can get up there and pin somebody or block it like 11 feet out the air or whatever. But it's all the like typical little stuff like, oh, when do I rotate? When do when do I dig here? And, you know, and it didn't help that the Ignite. So listeners, Maxwell probably undersold how much of a.
It was terrible.
It was not horrific. And on defense, a lot of it was just like, okay, if you get a screen, just switch. Like, so you don't have to mm-hmm. practice like, you know, hedge and recover or any other types of coverages. And it did him no favors in that sense. So to me, I guess one of the, you know, how much confidence a team has in their ability to get like some of the little things of NBA defense into his brain is probably the biggest swing skill for me, because yep. as a four, you know, you could be, if you're a four who doesn't really do all that stuff, then you better be a splash-tacular shooter scorer Tobias Harris type situation, because most teams rely on their fours to do a lot of different stuff on defense. So even off the bench. So it's like, what do you make of him? And then a related question in addition to what do you make of his defense as a four, but like, how do you feel just more generally about NBA teams teaching that stuff?
That second question is a great question. Just in general, I'll answer the first one first. So I think as far as like his ability to play defense in general as a four, I think his biggest issue is just anticipation, like off the ball. Like I think on the ball, he's actually like pretty solid. Like when he sits down in his chair, he's pretty balanced. Like his footwork is okay. Like he doesn't get crossed up too often. Like I think he's fine on the ball. I think it's the off ball stuff that really strains out. Like you mentioned, like when to dig, like that's a great example. I think another thing too is like there will be times where he's late on a rim rotation because he's like sitting really heavily on his feet. Like he's just like way like in almost like in a stance and in a position where like you can afford to be a little bit more upright and springy and just like hop over. Like that's the kind of stuff that I want to see tighten up. It's just like how he's engaged off the ball, and then his like off ball defensive footwork as far as just how he's positioned and how he's sitting on his heels. I think as far as NBA teams teaching it, I think it's going to be a little bit situational, which is a cop-out answer. I think some teams can do a good job of it. I would say it's one of my concerns with him is I do think it's something that can be tough to develop in the G League. Because it is by its nature just a league where a lot of people aren't playing defense. And I think it can be tough when you're good in the G League that like a coach can't be like, well, I'm going to take you out and put in like a guy who just got done playing his sixth season at Sacramento State. Like it's hard to face repercussions for being bad on defense in the G League. I look at a guy like Leonard Miller, who I loved last year, like don't Damn. Feel a ton better about him defensively than I did a year ago. So I do think it's a little bit precarious. I think a lot of it's going to come down like to the person and then the coaching staff that you have around them, which I know is a cop out, but I think it is kind of case by case. And that's part of what makes him a tricky evaluation. Like I think he's a guy that may have a wider draft range than we're giving it credit for. Just because I think certain teams might be put off by the idea of like, you know, are we developing something that, that might never come along? Is he going to be able to pick this up? Where is he at personality wise? Do you want somebody that's a little more plug and play and experienced? Like, I think it's just going to come down to what teams value, but I think it's attainable for him because the physical tools are there. Like, we're not talking about somebody who is, you know, like physically deficient,
right,
and has not shown like any mental acuity. Like, I think Tyler Smith knows how to play the game of basketball, and like, he wouldn't have flashes if he didn't. And I don't think he would be as like quick of an offensive decision maker if he like didn't get it. I think it's a lot of just fine tuning mechanical things more than just about anything else.
That's kind of where I am. Some people kind of talk about him as if he's just clueless out there, and mm-hmm. he misses moments where he's supposed to do stuff like everybody yeah. on that team. But there's also instances where I'm, like, he knows, like, this is a hard closeout. I need to take one dribble and pass it, or take one dribble mm-hmm. and take a pull up. And then on defense, like, he has the ability to get in a stance and defend somebody out on the perimeter. Like, he's been really good switching onto smaller guys. And then he has the length and strength to defend guys close to the hoop. So it's just when to deploy what skills and all that. And that's what gets me really intrigued from a Knicks perspective is, mm-hmm. is, you know, Tibbs is like a big man whisperer. Like, look what he did with yeah. Precious. Like, we were like, Precious, sure. We're just going to wave him as soon as he comes, touches down on JFK or whatever. And then he ended up being like a really great bench player who's even helping mm-hmm. in the playoffs and stuff like that. And it was the same thing with Precious, where it's like, you don't worry about the physical skills with Precious. You worry about him just knowing what the hell to do. And that's yeah. not to say the Knicks always do it right, because Jericho Sims still quite hasn't been able to do that. But Jericho Sims also came into the league at like 23.
Yeah, he was old. Change. Yeah, he'd been in Texas for a while.
And Tyler's pretty, well, he's going to be what, 20 on draft yep. night, I think. So mm-hmm. he's pretty young. So it's, you know, if the Knicks want to take a swing, I, you know, for the majority of the cycle, I just assumed like Tyler Smith is going to be a lottery pick, but like yeah, all these yeah. mocks could have him later, like right mm-hmm. in the Knicks range or right before it. So he definitely is not the kind of guy who could probably give them a ton of help next year, but mm-hmm. like, you know, which is their, of their draft picks, you have guys like Grimes and Quick who are able to actually help out, albeit in limited fashion, as rookies, and then they also had upside later. And then you had some guys like Deuce who needed a little more time in the oven mm-hmm. before the beautiful cake was done being baked. And mm-hmm. so like, I'm like, this could go either way as far as like how the Knicks kind of view him. But the Knicks really like athletes. They really like shooters. And they like guys who are not teenagers. And I'm like, okay, so Tyler Smith is all those things. Like, maybe they'll consider him. So I don't know.
Yeah, I also think, like, just, like, one more argument I would make in his favor is I wonder what he would look like if that team had, like, a single rim protector on it. Because, like, even when Eric Mika was healthy, like, that's not his game. Ethan Almanza mm-hmm. is not a rim protector. Like,
right.
some of the other guys they tried to bring in to, like, play the five spot were just, like, 6'8", like, thick dudes that can't jump. Like,
right.
So I do wonder if he'd been in a situation where, like, he had one other guy on the court that could, like, handle that sort of thing. If, like, maybe we don't notice all the times that he's late. If, like, there's one guy cleaning up this mess. Like, I know that's not an argument to say, like, that doesn't mean he can do that stuff. But, like, I do wonder if maybe it's not as big of a problem as you realize, just because there was such little rim protection on that team in general. Like, Modis was probably, like, the best rim protector they had this year.
Yeah, and Modis is not 200 pounds.
No.
Cool. All right. Well, do you, anybody who like, if anything, listeners, the main takeaway is like, Tyler Smith has a lot of potential. And when you read Maxwell's piece, if you haven't, like, we've been like very modest and conservative here describing yeah. him. You're going to like, the first time I read the Tyler Smith piece you wrote, I was like, oh, so Black Lauri Markkanen, like, yes, please, I'll take him in Madison Square Garden immediately. Like, this is fantastic.
He's a real deal shooter. And I also think, too, like, we didn't even get, like, I think, like, there's just so much that his shooting is going to provide at that height. It's like a pick yeah. and pop guy, which he's already good at. Like, very good at, like, moving his feet into a shot, was good in transition. Actually, like, was good in the instances that they ran him off screens. Like,
mm-hmm.
if a team is playing an aggressive pick and roll ball screen, like in high pick and roll, and you can just like dump it to him at the top of the key, like, I love that. Like, I love him acting as like a safety valve and like short roll guy and like all that stuff. Like, that stuff is really great for like a guy that's 19 years old right now, will be 20 at the start of his rookie season. Like, he's really advanced in that department.
Yeah, he's got some real skills, and I'll write some stuff on him later in the cycle in terms of like what he could be if he's not hitting his top outcome. But I think that's still, there's still a lot of potential there. So the next guy I want to talk about is FSU's Jameer Watkins.
Yes.
Who, interestingly, iEmoji signed with CAA, also known as the Knicks personal sports agency, if you ask some. So that only got me slightly more excited. And my kind of journey with reading about Florida State University's Jameer Watkins was like, I didn't watch no Florida State.
I don't blame you. I tried to avoid it as much as I could.
And then he popped up in some statistical research I was doing as a guy who just like, well, no, the first thing he popped up on was highlights, because I was like, damn, who's this dunk contest dunk ass motherfucker who's just posterizing people like crazy? And then I was like, okay, that's cool, but he's on Florida State. I don't care. And then I went on with my life. And then he popped up in some statistical queries on Bartorvik and stuff like that. And it's like, oh, so this guy's like getting a lot of steals and blocks as like a 2-3, and he dunks all over the place, and he's kind of a good shooter, and his box plus minus is pretty fucking good. And then when I actually watched this film, I was like, oh, he can also pass as well. So
yeah.
And then I figured out, oh, he's gonna be almost 23 at the draft, which is probably one of the other reasons why he's just beasting on some, you know, future grad school TAs or whoever he's playing against. But like, I don't know, I struggle with like how to overlay the age stuff onto the statistical production. I never know, like, okay, if somebody has killer stats and is just destroying people on film, but they're 23, like, when, like, at what age do I start kind of grading it on a curve or discounting the production or whatever? So that's kind of what I struggle with for him, because to me, he seems like a guy who can, you know, he's not hot sauce out here, but he can put it on the deck.
Yep.
He can defend. He's super fucking athletic. And his shot numbers were like, all right, they weren't like amazing, but they weren't bad. And his shot doesn't look bad either. So like it looks like it could be a little better, but I'm like, okay, dribble pass, shoot wing athlete, sign me up. Seems like a first rounder to me, but he's always in like the 50s in these mock drafts. So, what's your take on, on him and why he's not getting any love out here?
So yeah, so I liked him a lot, like preseason. Like I do my No Stone Unturned series every summer where I cover like under the radar guys, and he was the guy I covered for it. I liked him a lot at VCU before he was at Florida State. So the biggest concern I'm sure a lot of people listening are gonna have are like, yeah, he's like 23 years old. I think his journey is like fascinating though. So he went to VCU. He's like this okay, like energy bench defender his freshman year. Sophomore year, tears his ACL, does not play. Comes back the next year at VCU and is like still sort of in a six-man role, but is like good. And then up transfers to Florida State, is their highest usage starter, and averages like 15.6, 6, 2.8, and then like almost two steals in a block.
Yeah, what happened
so
there?
Like the upward trajectory is real. And all of this was there, like in the VCU tape. Like he's very clearly athletic. He very clearly has some like decision-making chops, and he can really play defense. Like this year, like I mentioned, he was their highest usage starter, and he had a 3.8 steal rate and 3.2 block rate. Like
that's crazy.
Really knows how to play off the ball, but like can be smothering on it. So I don't think people realize like how good he is as an isolation defender. I need to pull up the stat, cause this was like wild. So last year at VCU, in isolation, he guarded 20 isolation possessions. On those 20 possessions, opponents scored 5 points and had 6 turnovers. So, like, this dude can lock down the ball. He measured it like 6'5", I think 6'5 and a half, but like a 6'10.75 wingspan. So, like, legit wing size for an NBA player. Very strong.
Very strong.
But he's just a guy who's gotten better every single year. Like, his shooting percentages have gone up. His free throw percentage has gone up. He's gotten way better at the basket. Like the other thing that like really annoyed me at VCU was despite his athleticism, he's not a great finisher still, but was like a downright bad finisher at VCU coming into the year. And a big part of it was like, he would just force every look at the rim. Like, if he got to the rim, it was going up. It didn't matter how crowded the paint was. It didn't matter how many guys were in the way. He was going up with it. This year, he actually slowed that down and was quicker to, like, move off the ball when that look wasn't there. Had a negative assist turnover ratio, but really good, like, passing flashes prior to this year. This year, gets that in the positive. Again, is a leading option in the ACC after being the sixth man at an A-10 school. So I think with Jameer, like, so much of it is, like, yes, there is NBA defensive skill there right now. Yes, there's NBA size and athleticism right now. The shot, it's okay, but he's going to rebound. He's going to defend. He can make decisions with the ball, and he's getting, like, way better year over year. So I think part of it is, like, yes, he's older, but, like, the improvement trajectory goes crazy. Like, you got to, like, have some respect for that.
And that's something that the Knicks have also, it seems from the outside looking in, have favored, right? You look at Quickley, for example, five-star prospect, underwhelms, sophomore year SEC player of the year. Quentin Grimes, five-star prospect. A lot of things went weird in Kansas. Transfers, killed mm-hmm. it, right? Like, Deuce, he had an upward rise and ended up as another, like, dominant defensive player who was also the high usage offensive player, although not, like, high in a vacuum, but, like, high on his team. So this is something that I think they pay attention to. And he's another one who I'm like, damn, like, this guy, like, all these guys are play, all these Knicks are players who A, can play a defense, B, are NBA ready physically for the most part. Quickley was skinny and then got jacked, but he was pretty athletic mm-hmm. in his own
yeah,
right.
He was fast. Yeah.
He was super fast. And Grimes, you know, he was a pretty strong guy and an athlete in his own right. Sims, obviously super athletic. Even Rokas Jokubaitis was, like, athletic in his own right back in the day when they picked him, even though he hasn't come over yet. Talk soon. So Jameer just seems to check a lot of boxes. The other thing that appealed to me about Jameer was, like, you have his defense and you have the athleticism and he can do a little bit of everything, but he seems like a guy who, if his usage is lowered, you know, say he gets bench situational minutes in the NBA, like, mm-hmm. you wish the jump shot was a little better for that. But aside from that, like, I'm like, okay, so he seems like a guy who can keep the ball moving, who can play defense, who can cut, who can get out in transition. So he can do a lot of role player stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like a good fit for this Knicks team who needs guys other than Josh Hart who are above 6'4".
Yeah, I really just think there's, like, value in taking guys that, like, maybe have a flaw, but, like, if they can right that, like, all of a sudden they're incredibly valuable. Like, there's a difference between, like, I'm trying to think of, like, an example of this. Like, if,
like, they're one thing away.
Yeah. But if that thing, like, transforms them into being, like, a playoff level contributor. So, I like PJ Hall. Like, PJ Hall is, like, a nice, like, shooting big man, like, prospect. Mm-hmm. But if I took, like, PJ Hall and I was like, what if instead of, like, a 35% three-point shooter, he's like a 39% three-point shooter. It's like, mm-hmm. okay, well, like, he's, like, a little better, but he's still, like, doesn't have great measurements for a center. Like, defensive positioning needs work. Like, it doesn't, like, change the value proposition a ton. But what if he was like this? We're like, with Jameer, if he's just, like, a slightly better shooter, it, like, really, really alters,
right.
like, how much value he can bring your team. And, like, to your point, too, about, like, just how on ball he is, like, the fact that he got better as a driver in, like, a worse situation to be a driver where you're on a Florida State team where nobody can shoot the ball, like, that's great. Like, I like to see that. So,
yes. Okay. Maxwell, we just lost, so bear with us. Technical difficulties. All right, and we're back.
I think Jameer is, like, one of my favorite bets, especially if he gets to the second round, because, like, generally second round guy, you're like, oh man, I hope they can, like, do something that will allow them to just, like, be on an NBA floor. We're with Jim Meir, the proposition isn't that. It's like, if this shot does come along, like, we're dealing with a guy who, like, we'll be paying serious money to, because he's going to be like a playoff rotation guy.
Yeah, it in a lot of ways, it's similar to Deuce to me. Deuce, he had the jumper and was a little shaky coming in, but, like, I was very confident the jumper would come around, and boy, has it, right? But the one thing for him is, like, okay, can he do something inside the arc? Otherwise, he's a gritty but very, very undersized off-ball guard. And in this playoffs, we've seen him take floaters that don't look like someone pressed the shoot button by accident. We've seen him drive and take lefty layups. And, like, this has happened all over the last 2 months. And it's just like, oh, my God. So this is it's happening. But he had the one thing that he needed to work on. And it's apparently here. And, you know, that's the difference between him being a guy who gets $1.5 million a year, which is what the Knicks signed him for in his extension, and somebody who potentially can make, like, double digits, or 9 or 10 or 11 or something like that, million a year. So, and he's 6 feet, right? And Jameer's has, like, shooting guard, small forward size. So that's even more value in that way. So I don't know, when he was firmly on my target list. And then when he signed to CAA, I'm pretty sure I was, like, tweeting in all caps or whatever. I'm like, yes, do it, Leon Rose, do it. You're right there. So,
well, like, I think if we look at even just, like, Jordan Walsh and, like, Ryan Repair, like, guys who were sort of, like, viewed as just the shot guys, like, those guys shot the ball well in the G League this year. So, like, even if Jameer doesn't play right away, it's like, well, then you hope that, and, like, again, like, he's older, so the timeline and, like, the crunch on that timeline is different. But I think you would hope that, like, yeah, even just, like, if it does take a year, like, again, the value is so high if he comes out the other end.
And the things he needs to work on are the things that you are saying, and I agree, are things you can work on in the G League. Because with him, you don't really have to worry about, like, the defensive stuff. He's pretty much got that. With him, you got to worry about, like, can you get your volume up both off the catch and off the dribble from three? Can you tighten up your mechanics a little bit, right? Like, those sort of things. And it all involves basically shooting, which is all you get to do at the G League. So that's another kind of note in his favor to me, just looking at other Knicks prospects and what they've had to work on in the G League and stuff like that. And I don't know, if he ends up on another team and after being picked like 40th or something like that, I'm going to be mad, but
yeah,
we will see. The last guy I want to talk about, save the best for last, your one of your most recent pieces is Neat Clifford, who he has a fascinating journey that I'm sure you know a lot about, having gone deep dive on him. But he came on my radar because he was a box plus minus guy for a lot of the year. He plays for Colorado State, which was like a team I didn't care about, and I kind of saw him just pop up on these stat inquiries as someone who seemingly was low usage-ish, but could do everything. And on top of that, his highlights would also pop up for cool dunks. And then he just kind of, the more I dug into him, the more I was intrigued. And my kind of central question with him was like, all right, this guy appears to be a pretty solid shooter, an amazing athlete, especially like jumping, like 1 foot, 2 foot, left foot, right foot, contact, no contact, runway, no runway. Like, he's a very functional jumper. He's pretty strong. I kind of just assumed he was like 23 or 24, but he's actually not that old. He's what, going to be 22, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Like normal age senior.
Right. And so I just assumed he was like, he's not young, but he's not, you know, Duarte out here, 24 years old. So I'm like, okay, he's not too old. He's even younger than Jameer Watkins, who I love. And, you know, same as Jameer, I'm like, okay, this guy looks like a bench wing with a do-it-all responsible floor with a little bit of upside because of the skills he has. Why isn't he higher on other people's boards, right? Same thing as Jameer. So I'm curious kind of how your journey scouting him went, because this is a guy who transferred from one school in the state to the other school in the state, didn't really do much at Colorado, and then kind of just blew up this year.
So he was like a sicko favorite for a while at Colorado. So last year, like his junior year was rough. But like, I know like Evan on our team, like really liked him as a sophomore at Colorado. Cause like it was similar stuff. Like he was like doing a lot. Like he was really stepping in the stat sheet. He had this down junior season, transfers to Colorado State. And like, suddenly he's really good. It took me a while to get like in on him. Like Corey Tulliba on our team was like the first of people like this year in a park group, I think, to like really buy into it. And it wasn't really until I did a film dive prior to interviewing him that I was like, whoa, okay. I had him early second before that. He's worked his way up to the first for me. Combine wasn't like awesome for him in terms last of like, the play. So he measured at like 6'5 with a 6'8 wingspan. In the games, like he wasn't terrible, but like he had a couple defensive lapses, like just wasn't great. I still really like what he's bringing to the table though. And I'm more accepting of defensive lapses in a combine setting when you're playing with guys you've never had to communicate with before. So I wasn't like as worried about that, but yeah. So the big thing with him is just like functional athleticism and functional everything. Like on defense, it really shows up because like he's 6'5". He's only 200 pounds, but like he holds up way better.
Really?
Yeah. I had to like send multiple texts to confirm his weight. before I wrote the article, I was like, that doesn't seem right.
He plays like he's fucking 230.
I would have guessed 220.
Yeah.
So yeah, like defensively, and he moves his feet super well, and he's really, really strong through his chest. Like there's one part of the article where I made just like four clips where it's him guarding Jared Lucas, who's like this knockdown like shooter and like perimeter space creator who's gonna make $1 billion in Europe. Trey Alexander, who's like a pick and roll guard. Cody Williams, who's like a downhill forward, and Isaiah Crawford, who's like a very big bruising forward. And like all four of them are just like met with his chest and can't go anywhere and have to lob up some terrible shit that like he blocks half the time. Like he is genuinely a multi-positional defender. Like he can truly guard up and down the lineup and give people absolute fits. Not like, oh, you know, maybe he can guard a four sometimes. Like he can do it. So he's very well equipped for that. Really good, like help shot blocker. And like I say, help shot blocker and not weak side rim protector, because like he's very into knowing the scouting report and knowing when he can gamble and when he can't. So there's a lot of times where he's like, I'm going to help from the slot because I know this guy at the elbow is not a willing passer and that he is going to shoot this shot. So I'm going to come over and like block a shot as a help defender at the elbow. Like there's a lot of like weird stuff like that pops up on the Neek tape. That's like my favorite thing about him. The shot's a question. He shot 37.6% from three on low volume. It was up and down percentage wise throughout the year. But historically throughout college, I think he finished his college career like 42% on spot up three. So like, if nothing else, you can't just like leave him alone. It seems like
his shot looks fine.
Yeah, it takes a while. It's like my one gripe. Like sometimes he just like really loads up on it, and there were like shots that he had to not take or pass up because the closeout would come and he just couldn't get it off in time. But if he can just like get him up a little bit more frequently, which I don't think is like a huge ask, I think he is maybe the best driver in this class, which is like a thing I wrote about in the article. So Synergy, they have the set, which is like spot up twos. Which it sounds on its surface like you catch a two and you shoot it. And that's not what it is. What it really is like your percentage on twos that you take after a spot up. So it could be a catch and shoot two, but it could also be you drove to the rim. You took a shot in floater range. You took a mid-range pull-up.
Closeout attacks, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how I view it, yeah.
Exactly. So in terms of like number of spot up twos taken, he was like toward the top of the list, especially if you do it on like a per game basis of like other wings and forwards that we have in the first round of our consensus board. He had by far the best percentage on those shots. So like Zachary Risacher made like 27.5% of his spot up twos. Like he's just a guy who has like no handle, can't get to the rim on his own, easy to bump around, whatever. A guy like Ron Holland, who's like extremely fast, but played on a team with bad spacing, maybe because of his usage for some shots that you wouldn't like him to take, he was still solid. Like he still made 47.3% of his spot up twos. Neek Clifford made 66.7% of his spot up twos. Like, no one else was in his tier or his category. And I know that there are going to be people that say, oh, well, you know, like, he played in a mid-major school and this and that. But, like, the Mountain West isn't a joke. And they played a pretty grueling, like, pre-conference schedule. Like, they played Creighton. They played, like, a lot of real teams during the early part of the schedule. So this was a case. Yeah, they played Colorado. They played Washington. They played Boston College. They played Louisiana Tech. So, like, they played other teams with, like, pro guys on it. And you got to see him against Virginia and Texas during the tournament. And he ate Virginia for breakfast. So, like, let's not, like, act like, you know, he can't do it. So Neek is, like, this nasty, nasty, nasty downhill attacker. He keeps his eyes up. He can make a plethora of passes as he heads to the rim. Once he goes downhill, he is fast. He is really strong. You can't bump him off his line. He rises through contact, and he sees everything. The way that he attacks closeouts just, like, screams playoff guy to me. Yep. The way that he defends screams playoff guy. It's just a matter of, like, can he draw enough respect to himself as a shooter? And I think that's where it's going to come down to. Positionally, I wish he was, like, a little bit bigger. Like, I wish he was a guy that, like, you could almost throw at the four if need be. He's probably going to have to be more of, like, a 2-3 given how he measured. But I still like him a lot because, like, he is a devastating, devastating driver and a guy who can guard a lot of people really well.
Yeah, he took 6 threes per 100 possessions, which is a mad number. And one thing that is interesting that has come up with a lot of players in this class for me is older wing-ish players who take around 5 or 6 threes per 100.
There's a million of them.
There's a million of them, and with a lot of them, you know, one of the questions is, like, they just got to get their volume up. And the track record of older wing-ish prospects doing that in the NBA is actually kind of abysmal.
Yeah.
But I almost wonder if that's just because, like, this is a small sample of players to begin with. Because to me, like, I get that some of them, that's just how they are, right? That's their shot or whatever. But, like, the age of having players come into the league and needing to do that is a relatively new thing. Like, this is a new phenomenon. So maybe this is me just sipping on the copium, because a lot of my prospects that I like are like that, right?
Yeah.
Like Pelly Larson, who you also wrote about, kind of fits into this. And I'm just like, like, all you got to do is go to Westchester and chuck for a year. And then, then we'll be out the woods. It'll be fucking fantastic. And then we'll have another secret draft steal from Walt Perry and Leon Rose. But, like, maybe it's harder than that. I don't know. So, like, where are you at on that particular thing? Because to me, that's his main, like, you hit it on the head. Like, that's the main, I'm just circling that in red highlighter. Like, that's his main homework as an NBA prospect, is, like, show that you can just kind of chuck a little bit.
It's scarier for me the smaller guy is, which is, like, why Neek's measurements were a little rough. Like, if we look at, like, sub 6 3-point per 100 possession attempt guys, like, the guys who it didn't seem to affect are guys like Tari Eason or even like a PJ Washington to a degree, where it's like, okay, maybe he's ever going to take like a million, or even like Jalen Johnson, or even like you could throw like Herb Jones into that, where it's like they're, but like they just have so much size that like defensively, like they're so, so versatile, and they bring enough other stuff that it's fine. Where like the smaller you go down the spectrum, it's like, that's still been an issue for Jayshon Tate until this very season. It was an issue for Derrick Jones Jr. It's a big part of like why Nasir Little is not in a great position all the time.
Exactly.
Like there was a reason that Isaac Okoro can be abandoned at times, even though I thought he did like better in the playoffs this year. Like the smaller you are, the more precarious it becomes. Which
the
is
more
why,
you need
like,
to get that volume up.
Yeah. Which is like just the track record, like you said, is not great. But if you're bigger, it's a lot better. And I think that's like where I get a little more nervous with Neek post combine. Was like, it would have been one thing if he like had some defensive lapses and that was it. But if he had like a 6'11 wingspan, and he was like 6'7, maybe I'd feel a little bit different about it.
Yeah. And like, he has I mean, we can say 2-3, but like, if you know, if somebody was like, no, he's a shooting guard, like then that kind of puts it into perspective. It's like, oh yeah, you need a shooting guard to shoot a lot. Like,
yeah,
like you said, Deuce was able, like we were saying, Deuce was able to ratchet his threes per 100. Now he's double digits. So like he's, he's clear on there, but like, again, that's not the norm. So it's kind of tricky, but you know, in a draft like this, because of the gifts that he has, like you said, right? This is a phenomenal, incredible defender who can like be in your shirt and is good off ball.
Yeah.
And he's got the finishing and he's got the passing. So it's like,
oh, it's so close. Yeah.
So you're right there. So this is why I'm like, Knicks, just fucking just take the gamble.
Yeah.
Just do it. Like this is, you have that's the roster to do it right now.
Yeah.
Like if you miss, who cares?
That's my entire thing with Neek specifically is like on some of these guys, like you're always betting on something at a certain point. The probability of like you hitting is low. So like just take the guy that if it comes together, like you can play in the playoffs. Like I would so much rather take that guy than like one of the like boring point guards that will be pretty good. Like I would that's just my personal philosophy on it.
Yeah, yeah, I hear you. And I'm in the same boat as a Knicks fan. Like the Knicks, like I was saying, they don't have like a real like set the table backup point guard asterisk in case Deuce has another leap. But like unless they bring over Rokas Jokubaitis, which another asterisk because that situation's weird. Mm-hmm. So like Tyler Kolek has been mocked to the Knicks a bunch, and I get it. He's like a dog. He's kind of Knicksy in that respect. Mm-hmm. Productive, upperclassman, all that shit that the Knicks like. But I'm like, I mean, like. Great, like you got a table setter point guard, like whoop-de-doo, whatever.
They're just easier to get,
right?
Like, think about like all of the times that like Peyton Pritchard has been like in trade rumors, and how many times Pritchard has like gotten traded. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And like, if Boston could like get something real for him, I'm sure like they probably would have done that at some point.
Right.
But they didn't. Like, they were just like, "Hey, buddy, the tough luck. Like, we're gonna stick it out." So, yeah, like it's just one of those things that's easier to get.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you got to go to Home Depot to make a $10 purchase, and I get that. Mm-hmm. But look, man, if the Knicks were going shopping, I want them to go shopping out here, okay? Like, I need them to take a swing and give me one of these wings who can do a little bit of everything. And, you know, I'll definitely talk myself into whoever they take just because they've killed the draft. But I don't know. I'm right with you in terms of how I'm viewing these guys and how I'm viewing this particular draft, where the other guys who are quote unquote safer are like a pair of socks as far as the gifts goes. I'm cool.
There's just like older guys in the G League that you could sign tomorrow that like can probably give you similar production, or like just other guys you could get on a minimum or close to it.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, cool. Well, thank you, Maxwell, for running through these three favorites of mine. I still haven't finalized my Knicks board of like non-lottery guys I want.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure they're going to all be in the top like five or six, along with some of the other guys you mentioned, like Isaiah Crawford and some other guys we haven't. But tell folks where they can find you, and if there's anything that you want to plug that you got coming down the pipeline, please let the people know.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Boundboards. All my written work is on NoCeilingsNBA.com. If you subscribe to the No Ceilings NBA podcast feed, me and Stephen, we do a show together that comes out every Monday. We're doing a ton of player interviews still, so those usually go up on Tuesdays, so keep an eye out for those also. Got to interview Neek Clifford, so that was a good interview. I like Neek as a guy a lot, too, I would say. I think he's like the right blend of like confident but understanding his confidence as far as like knowing what his role is going to be. So I liked him as a guy a lot too. I'll throw that out there. That's where you can find all my stuff.
All right. We know the Knicks love that archetype of personality too. So I emojis, talk soon, et cetera, et cetera. Maxwell, thank you again. People, please give Maxwell a follow. Give No Ceilings a follow. We'll link to all the good stuff on these players that Maxwell has written, and the interviews and all that. So check that out on Twitter once we post the links. Listeners, thank you. Hopefully the Knicks are still playing. If they're not, hopefully you can get excited about these guys playing instead. And we'll catch you next time. Here's David Stern.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, didn't see that coming, and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.